Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
You're watching the Action Sports Jax 24/7 Network. Now, it's time for the Brent and Austin Show.
Hey, welcome to String Sports Brewery. Back at it here on a Thursday, heading into Final Four weekend. You got a chance to shoot some free throws for a big TV. And while you're doing it, come grab some lunch. Look at that menu. Hey, grab some beer as well. It's a good place to be. We're back in Springfield. They just put the music on. You know, some people like to be a closer.
Yeah.
I don't mind being an opener.
No, it's all good, man.
Yeah.
I'm not mad at this.
I mean, we're opening this place up. It doesn't really open until 11, so come on by 11 o'clock until 1. We'll be here for your purposes. Obviously, the show starts right now. Brent Martin, Austin Lane, Brent and Austin Show. Back in our corner. I think it's going to be our corner. Like, Hammy's got the kids' corner.
Yeah, we got
our strings corner.
I like that.
All right?
Yeah.
Conversation corner.
Conversation corner. Don't have to put us on timeout like sometimes with the Hammy and the kids' corner. But, we're all good over
here. If it gets intense, alcohol right there.
There you go, man. Chase it down with, what do we got? We got some Portal, West Coast IPAs. We got the Duke going on here. Yeah, a few lagers, I see. And, Brent, of course, we do have wine as well.
Bartender, please play bartender. You can't drink that stuff. You got a fight coming up.
Absolutely.
In a few weeks. I got nothing coming up. It's a pillow fight for me. Bigs feels like some haymakers being thrown in the AFC South yesterday with the Houston Texans news. That's still got everybody buzzing a little bit about what the Texans did with Stephon Diggs, what the Jaguars will now do. Got a poll question out there, by the way. I almost put this out yesterday during the show, and then Diggs happened like right when it was going on.
Yeah.
So it kind of threw me off, and it probably would have been a different answer. I wish I had done it at like 10:30, 10:45, because I wonder what the delineation between the answers would have been.
Yeah.
Like, okay, yeah, we want receiver. So let's just say I just did this morning. It's only about 45 minutes old, 160-plus votes, and I asked, would you be happy if the Jaguars traded into the top 10 to get wide receiver? 73% say yes right now.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at. And by the way, I don't know if it would have been 73%. Yesterday at 10 in the morning, but I do think it would have been like 60%. I think a lot of people would like to see that happen. I think a lot of people agree with the logic of that many of us are making about helping Trevor Lawrence, but helping the offense, keeping up on offense. You do have to remember this. It's one thing we miss about the Jaguars. They should be and should have an offensive identity. I don't know if they want to say that inside the building. I don't know if they want to hurt the feelings of the defensive guys. Josh Allen tweeted out yesterday, the game is won in the trenches. Yeah, we get it. But there's no doubt that this is an offensive league. Doug Peterson's an offensive guy, and you have a young quarterback in Trevor Lawrence that's supposed to lead the way for you. So I think that part of it is a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, the game is definitely won and lost in the trenches, but it also helps to have some bona fide playmakers on offense as well. You know, I mean, go ahead and just ask the San Francisco 49ers, which was kind of their calling card all year, where they played decent defense, but their identity was offensive explosiveness. And yes, the Kansas City Chiefs relied a little more, I think, on their defense, but still having Travis Kelce, the best quarterback in the league, can help you win a Super Bowl as well.
Yeah, so this settles in, and the Jaguars, obviously, 3 weeks from today, it's draft time. And now we get to see what the Jaguars might do and how does this build up, what ramps up, what changes for the rest of the league, really. It's not just the Jags. Do you think anybody else will now take a look at what Houston's doing and try to ante up a little bit? Did they force anybody else's hand? I think that is kind of fascinating. We discussed it a little bit yesterday. I grew up around the Yankees-Red Sox rivalry, and you would actually see a move corresponding to another move on occasion just because of the rivalry, because they knew it was between those two a lot of times in the American League East. I don't really feel like we see that in football. I don't really have at least an example of it that sticks out to me, like, oh, well, they did this because the other team did that. I think you do build your teams around the strength of your division. And this, when Doug Peterson arrived in 2022, this division was a running back division. Jonathan Taylor,
yep.
Damian Pierce, if you will, and of course, Derrick Henry. In 2 years, Austin, this is no longer a running back division. I know people have running backs. This is a young quarterback with weapons division.
It is. I mean, I still think that the Titans will run the ball. I still think the Colts can run the ball with Jonathan Taylor. I mean, now obviously Houston can kind of do whatever they want with Joe Mixon in the backfield and now adding Stephon Diggs as well. But it definitely has shifted more towards, I think, your throwback old school type of offense and now more towards the explosive offenses, and that's thanks to the Houston Texans. I think when you talk about how teams retaliate in terms of, you know, bringing in more firepower in the division, like, make no mistake about it. Your first goal is to win the division, right? So you have to see who you're going against every single week, who you're going on in the division, and how can you counteract that. But at the same time, I would hope that the message in the Jaguars building is, we're not just going to let the Houston Texans decide how we're going to handle this draft. We're not going to let the Houston Texans decide how we're going to handle free agency, because we should already have a plan in place. And Stephon Diggs going to the Texans doesn't affect that whatsoever. Because eventually you guys start thinking bigger. It's like, all right, well, do we have the guys to beat the Dolphins, to beat the Jets, you know, to beat the Ravens? All right, well, do you or do you not? All of a sudden, Stephon Diggs going to the Texans is going to affect everything? Absolutely not. So I think in terms of that building right now, yeah, obviously you have to address Stephon Diggs when it's game planning time, but like, I don't see them going, okay, well, let's go and get a wide receiver right now. Let's go ahead and get a cornerback right now. Those thoughts, those actions, those conversations should have already been happening.
Yeah, and I'm sure they are. Again, I do not think these teams are too reactionary. I do think there's an emotional part of it. We used to hear back in the day that, like, a couple years after a draft, let's just say back in 2009 or 10 or whatever, that there would be some emotional moments, like in the draft room, that you would have a plan, you'd go in, and then when the board would shake out and who would be there, you would change. You'd almost, okay, let's go this way instead. And actually, Jack Del Rio might have been a perfect example of that when he came on with us on the old show. Mm-hmm. And he said, I was at the buffet line when they traded up to Blaine Gabbert.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that to me sounds a little bit emotional, or secrets being kept, I don't know. So it's not impossible for you to react on draft day or even prior to draft day. But I think I agree with you. I think teams are smart enough to know, with the scrutiny and everything, they better have a plan. They better worry about themselves before they start worrying about everybody else. At least a good organization should. And I hope Doug Peterson, this front office, Trent Baalke are doing that.
No, for sure. But I don't think bringing in Blaine Gabbert was a result of moves that were made in the division.
No, I agree.
You know, yeah. I mean, I think it was just a matter of miscommunication between a GM and a head coach.
Or they just didn't want to tell him.
Or they just wanted to tell him. Yeah, I mean, they probably weren't going to like the response to that, so they didn't tell him at all, yeah.
So I say it's now a young quarterback and weapons division. How do the Jags shape up in that division? How do you feel about the Jags with what they have on offense versus the rest of the division? I think right now everybody would say Houston has a scarier offense than the Jags coming off last season. Yeah. I think that's fair enough. I mean, they do add Joe Mixon, which to me, the Joe Mixon move just keeps them effective in the run game. Damian Pierce was really good a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And then last year, Singletary actually picked up a lot of the work and had some very productive games at the running back spot. He was a weapon for them. And now I think Joe Mixon comes in. I think you can ask the question, how much does Joe have left? Is he going to keep up with what he's been doing? I mean, the running back is an interesting spot when you talk about age, and he's definitely getting up there in age. But beyond that, you know what he's been able to do and can do. So you also have tight end. You also have these young receivers, and now you add a very proven receiver in Stephon Diggs. In many respects, this does feel a little bit like Calvin Ridley being added last year to the Jags, except that Diggs has been playing for a couple years and actually has a more impressive resume over time. Are the Jags next?
In terms of weapons?
Yeah, in terms of how their offense looks on paper.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could say that. I mean, you know, I'm not scared of the Titans whatsoever, so they're dead last. The Colts, you know, Jonathan Taylor, when he's healthy, still scares you a little bit. I think Michael Pittman, you know, has the Jaguars, in terms of just a one receiver, is better than any Jaguars receiver that you have. But as a collective, I would probably take even the Jaguars right now over the Colts, unless the Colts plan to make a move. I like Evan Ingram better. Offensive line, I mean, is a big part of football as well. Maybe the Colts have a little edge there. So it's comparable. I'd probably put the Jags 2, Colts 3, and Titans 4 in terms of offense total.
All right, look at the Jags. I think Hamby has this up on the screen right now, and look at the weaponry in the AFC South. And you probably can see this as well, hopefully, unless you're just listening. But Stephon Diggs, Nico Collins now, and Tank Dell. Again, the Nico Collins, Tank Dell are not necessarily these like Pro Bowl perennial guys, but what they did to Splash last year is certainly like, whoa, okay. And now I think you have really out of all these receivers, maybe the most proven receiver outside of DeAndre Hopkins in the division with Stephon Diggs, and maybe that's even debatable. Diggs better than Hopkins career-wise?
Oh, yeah. I mean, right now, where they're at in their careers, I think Diggs is better than Hopkins, yes.
So then you got Pittman, Downs, Pierce. I think that's the weakest of the three. I still question whether Pittman's like a true number one guy. I'm not downplaying what he can do, but I just don't think he's a scary number one guy to me.
You think that they're below Tennessee?
I kind of feel this, but I might be getting sucked into the name game here.
Okay, yeah.
I still would be more scared of Hopkins and Ridley.
Okay.
Burks hasn't done much to impress.
No. Not at all.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
It's hard to tell. I mean, if you put those three receivers on the Colts, will they do better? You know, it's hard to say as well. I mean, I'm also taking into account your quarterback right now is Will Levis, and set aside from his first career start, we had four touchdowns. You know, he kind of regressed a little bit during the season. So I'm not sure if I'm a Will Levis believer yet. If that's the case, well, then obviously it's going to downgrade Hopkins, Ridley, and Burks. But, yeah, I mean, once again, I think the Jaguars right now, like, if you put Evan Engram in this mix as well, you put tight ends, then it's hands down Jaguars are number two. I think if it's just wide receivers, you know, there's arguments around to make, but I would still have Jacksonville number two right now.
Yeah, I think so. It is. Here's the deal. I'm a huge fan of Christian Kirk. And I think what he does, I mean, he's a 1,000-yard receiver in my mind with an 8 to 10 touchdown projection, most likely, 7 to 10 touchdown. I mean, that's a quality wide receiver. I know people label him differently because of the style of it and everything else. But to me, I still think he's as dangerous as they come in the slot. He's one of the top guys in the red zone in the slot. There's a lot of metrics to like. But the bottom line is, if you just look at raw numbers, he's coming off. He's an ascending player still. Mm-hmm. I mean, without the six games lost at the end of last year, his chart would look like this every year of his career. So, I mean, I have even if he just tops out at where we thought he might end up, that's still a very productive year. He's on pace, I think, for like an 1,100, 1,200-yard season, and maybe has up to 10 touchdowns. So, yeah, different kind of number one. Gabe Davis, obviously, he's got the big play capability, but is he a, hey, now you see me, now you don't kind of guy? Mm-hmm. Like, you might see him for four or five catches for 105 yards, and then you might go a game where it's like one catch for 18.
Listen, it could be different here in Jacksonville, but when he was in Buffalo, I definitely got Marvin Jones Jr. vibes.
Yeah, okay. And then there's Zay Jones, who I think is a very productive player for the Jags, too. Now, how can he come off injury? He's an aging player. Like, he's getting up there now. He's not old, but he's not young. And so, and coming off injury. So I think that's something to watch. What happens? All right, the Texans aren't adding another receiver, right? I mean, where the heck would they put him?
No, I think they're all good.
They also have Noah Brown.
Yeah, I think they're all good now.
Indianapolis, I think, could add another receiver.
Sure.
The Titans, I mean, they could. I think they could.
Add a receiver?
Yeah. I mean, steal one of those top three guys at number seven?
I think they're going to let Brooks get another year to see what he can do.
I actually would say, could you then release like a guy like Hopkins if you got a Dunze or somebody like that?
Yeah.
You don't see it?
No, I don't see that.
So, I think these two teams, Indianapolis and Tennessee, are a candidate, at least, to grab receiver early. And they both pick ahead of the Jags.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't dismiss it. But if the Jags are able to get a receiver, a big-name receiver that everybody wants them to get, one of those top three guys, trade up and get them. We'll continue to throw the Ayuk and Higgins examples around. If they were to add to this group, I mean, what you would do here is bump Zay Jones out.
Yeah.
And then, wow, do you like that group?
Correct.
Would you like that group more than the Texans group?
No.
Really?
No, I mean, look.
If they got Ayuk, you wouldn't like Ayuk, Kirk, and Davis?
Here's how I feel right now. I think the Texans, without Stephon Diggs, had the best receiving core going into this up-and-coming season. Better than Christian Kirk, Gabe Davis, and Zay Jones. They add Stephon Diggs now. So, no, to me, I think the Texans are still better.
That'll be interesting, but what a domino effect either way.
Oh, right? No, I mean, it'll be competitive, but, like, once again, I think I'm just taking what I've seen so far on paper from the Texans, especially a young Nico Collins and a young Tank Dell, man. Like, they're not veterans yet.
No.
You know, and they're able to do their thing. Now, Tank Dell coming up an injury, so how does he respond to that? But I'm just saying what we saw on the field when they're on the field was pretty impressive.
Yeah, very explosive group. Right now, that's my problem when I look at this from really everybody except for the Texans. And I understand Gabe Davis is now a big play guy, 16.9 yards per catch. But if you look at Houston, they bother me because their big play capability throughout the whole thing. The rest of these guys, like the Jags guys, aren't big play outside of Gabe Davis.
Sure.
They've been more possession-y type players. Now, can they still go grab a big play? Absolutely. Zay Jones can do that.
Yeah.
But that's not how they've been utilized, at least in Doug's offense for the most part. And even Calvin Ridley wasn't totally utilized that way here in Jacksonville. Will he be utilized that way in Tennessee? We'll find out. But there's some age that's involved with that. That doesn't strike me as down the field for Tennessee. And Indianapolis, the same thing. Like, I don't look at them as a stretch the field. We're going to hit you with three different guys for 25 plus yards, and you got to defend it all. I only see Houston like that.
Yeah, but they also have a big body in Pittman who can go up and get every single jump ball that you throw to him.
It's so a different, like, kind of deal, yeah.
But it can still be a big play. Like, I mean, who do you think out of this group right here at wide receiver, who's the best wide receiver in this division?
Oh, that's a good one. I think it have to be Diggs.
Okay.
I think, until he shows signs of slowing down, Diggs is, here's the deal. When Calvin Ridley came here to Jacksonville, just go back to the conversation, say he and Diggs are two of the best route runners in the game. Okay. Sure. Well, I'm going to give him the edge to Diggs just because he's proven it more. DeAndre Hopkins has a resume. Well, guess what? So does Diggs. And Diggs' resume is more current. Hopkins feels older. You go up and catch it. Now, I think you're right. DeAndre Hopkins in traffic, Pittman in traffic, probably better. But until Diggs falls off, six straight years of 1,000 yards plus, and some of these are 1,400, 1,300, 1,200, 1,400. You know, those are really way above 1,000 yards. I think no doubt Diggs immediately establishes himself as the best receiver in the division currently until he proves otherwise. And maybe it's a Nico Collins or a Tank Dell that passes him by. Maybe it's somebody that gets drafted ahead of him. Maybe Burks comes on or Calvin has a huge year and year two coming back. I don't think we will talk about the Jags guys as the best receiver in the division overall. I think there are very nice attributes from big play to Davis to Kirk's ability, what he does, even from a route running technician standpoint and from the slot. But I don't know if we'll ever say any of these three guys are the best one in the division, which probably speaks to your point of, hey, that's why you go get the best guy in the division, whether it's Ayuk, whether it's Higgins, whether it's one of these top three guys.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, I mean, once again, it's not necessarily trying to keep up with the Texans and having the best receiving core, but it's keeping up with what works best for you. And yeah, I think we've talked about this before a little bit. You know, do the Jaguars, they have a big play guy in Gabe Davis. Can that be consistent? Gabe Davis and Zay Jones, I think, are kind of the same player. So, like, can you get a guy? Look at Stephon Diggs, Nico Collins, and Tank Dell. They're all different receivers, right? Tank Dell is the burner, right? He'll just take the top off. Nico Collins last year showed that he's kind of like a true one receiver. He can kind of do a little bit of everything and obviously offers that big play ability. And then Stephon Diggs, to me, is more like the security blanket. Like a Keenan Allen or somebody where it's, hey, when it's third and five, you need that route ran right. You need a go-to guy. Stephon Diggs is going to be your guy. So they have something, I feel like, at every wide receiver spot. I don't think the Jaguars have that right now. I think they have a great slot guy in Christian Kirk. I think you have a good, and then you have Gabe Davis and Zay Jones who can kind of do the same things.
All right, let me add one more wrinkle to this conversation to kind of put a bow on the receiver stuff for now, at least. Which division in the NFL actually has the best receivers?
Which division?
Because this is a good set. Like, this is a good group of receivers here. You've got your guy. I mean, listen, it's not the cream of the crop, but let's go to the AFC North because let's go where the top receivers are first.
Okay, I'm saying NFC West by a lot, but maybe not.
Okay, is that where your mind goes?
That's where my mind
goes. Well, because you go to Seattle.
Seattle, San Francisco.
San Fran. Arizona.
Yeah, and I just Seattle and LA.
And obviously and with the Rams. Yeah, you know what? You're right.
Yeah, and the Rams.
Yeah, you're right. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think of Seattle. Honestly, I just thought of LA right away. I thought of San Francisco.
But then Seattle has three.
Yeah, they're good too.
So now Ayuk could be leaving. Who knows what happens there? But
sure.
Did the value of like a guy like Ayuk go down at all yesterday when you see a trade like this for Diggs for what they gave up? Because I feel like wasn't the story like the Niners were looking for like a first rounder. And then that what everybody's thinking, right? Like you trade 17 away to go get Ayuk and maybe something else, and then you got to pay him on top of that. But did the price go down?
I don't think so. Just for the case of obviously the Bills wanted to ship Stephon Diggs, they didn't want him on the team anymore, so that came at a discount. And also, you had to take age into account as well, even though he hasn't showed any signs of slowing down. But you still take age into account a little bit.
Yeah, and there's a lot of money tied to it. Now the Texans will do fine this year with it, but this is the next couple of years, and they can do fine the next couple of years too, because they're only like $3 million guaranteed. It's a very low risk deal for the Texans. But for the Bills, this was a get out from underneath it for the next couple of years down the road. Let's do it now rather than later. And which also shows me that they're not all in to win this year, and they were kind of tired of Diggs. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that they were like, okay, it's time to move on. We're going to have to move on sometime. Let's just pull the plug right now, rip the band aid. Interesting what you said, though, about NFC West when I asked about the best receiver division. Woo, that is a good one out west.
Yeah.
That is a really good. I mean, what's crazy about that is look at the quarterbacks in that division. Geno Smith, which obviously is almost like a reclamation project, right, in a way. Yeah. Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant. And then you do have Matthew Stafford and Kyler Murray who come in, you know, heralded.
Yeah.
But if you're the Arizona Cardinals, you're looking at my $46 million quarterback. Like, no doubt they're taking Marvin Harris. They need to catch up in the receiver game in that division.
Yeah, without a doubt.
They're taking one of those guys unless they trade out of that spot.
No, they're. I mean, unless the trade value is so good. But no, they're definitely getting a wide receiver.
All right, let's take a break. We're live at String Sports Brewery. Here's the deal. It opens at 11 o'clock. We're here until 1 o'clock. We got a TV right next to it. It's a 65-inch TV. And you can put your name in the hat. There's like 7 people that have qualified. So you don't have to beat a bunch of people. But 10 for 10 from the free throw line gets you into Saturday's finals. And then the winner of that finals wins the TV. That's going to start at 6 o'clock on Saturday night. They'll get it all done that night. 10 for 10 from the free throw line qualifies you. We must not have enough good free throw shooters here in Jacksonville. But come on out to String Sports Brewery. You have really today and tomorrow. But we always say if you come here and challenge us, we'll buy you a beer as well. If you beat us, we'll be back.
Welcome back to the Brett and Austin Show, streaming on the Action Sports Jax 24/7 Network.
Hey, how about some flag football last night? Gateway Conference semifinals, and I want to say, let's see, this was the Ed White Stanton game. 4th and 5, late in overtime, and that's a touchdown. And then, watch this. Austin, extra point for the win to go to the finals. Run, no pass, touchdown.
Nice.
And there you go. Ed White able to pull off the win in overtime to advance, and they will take on, let me remember, who did I show last night on TV? It was Paxson and Fletcher won. There you go. I got a good memory. It's just short. Nope. Welcome back, everybody. String Sports Brewery, Brent Martineau. Along with Austin Lane, and we are opening the place up here in Springfield on a beautiful day. I'll tell you what, so far we're 2 for 2 on awesome days coming out to Strings. We were here last Friday. It was a terrific day. And
open the garage doors up. Get a little breeze in here.
I think they will for that lunchtime crowd. And again, come take some free throws. Austin has been prepping. I was the ball boy, went and got the ball out from underneath the net.
Appreciate that for Brent.
Yeah, so I got that going for me. Let's see if I can knock down some free throws a little bit later in the show as well. Brent Martineau, Austin Lane, Jason Hamby. And did you see this college football idea? I kind of threw it at you guys.
You did. You didn't throw us the athletic login.
I didn't realize that when I was clicking on it, I didn't. Sometimes I like this, actually, that you haven't seen it then, because I'll throw the idea at you, and you tell me if it sounds goofy, without quotes, explanation, whatever else. Okay. So here's the story on it, and it's actually got some powerful people that have looked into this and obviously developed an idea for college football specifically.
Okay.
And the whole idea is to build a league, if you will, or a super conference that separates from the rest of sports at the collegiate level, but also would be able to embrace the idea of NIL, which many people believe is going to be the downfall right now mm-hmm. of college athletics. Yeah. Right now, the conferences and the NCAA are too busy in courtrooms and losing court cases, mm-hmm. you know, to be able to keep up with it. Mm-hmm. And sooner or later, they think it might drain them if this keeps up, or there will just continue to be the Wild Wild West, which it right now is with no parameters. So the idea of doing the league is not just to accentuate football and probably make money and separate it from the other sports, which a lot of people have wondered if it should happen anyway. But I think a lot of this is to be able to put in guidelines around NIL to make it more like a collective bargaining agreement, if you will, amongst
okay.
players.
Okay.
So there's a little bit of that background to give okay. you. I think there's a lot of things at work here, but I think NIL is on the forefront of some of the motivation behind
it. Oh, yeah, without a doubt. People getting paid. I get that.
Yeah, sure. And doing it without the court intervention. It's yeah. the only defense of the colleges.
Yeah, it'll be its own respect. Jurisdiction.
All right, so here's the deal. 7-10-team divisions. You take basically what the old Power 5 was, even the Pac-12, and you include all those schools.
Okay.
And so that you get to about 70 in there, I guess, is what their plan is. And so you take 7-10 teams, it includes Notre Dame and some independents, too.
Okay, and are these divisions based off of proximity within each other? Like,
I didn't know if it got to that point, but I got to assume so.
Okay.
Okay? But what does is it breaks up the super conference of the idea of what we now currently know as the SEC and the Big Ten, which we're talking about like 4-16s.
Okay.
Teams, yeah. divisions, you know, or these super conferences.
Yeah.
But instead it separates it into 7-10 teams. Then there's another division that is comprised of 10 other teams. So the total number is 80.
Okay.
But those 10 get relegated or promoted each year based on performance.
So this is like the English Premier League.
It ties that in. Just okay. for those 10.
Yeah.
The 70 are safe.
Yeah.
Those old Power Fives,
yeah.
they are safe. They'll yeah. never get relegated or promoted. But those other 10 can get in and out based on performance.
Yeah.
Just the idea of that. Let's just take that for instance.
Okay.
What do you think of? Because here, let me just add one more wrinkle just to explain it. You now have 8 division champs, which then
yeah.
makes your playoff system pretty in line with what you have in sports.
Yeah.
Right? You have the 8 division champs. You pit them against each other. You go to a 4, then a 2, and a champ.
Yeah. What I think about it, I think it sucks. I think it's absolute trash.
Really?
For a few reasons. You said there's going to be 70 teams in this? Or 80 teams?
Overall, that would be 80, yes.
Yeah. Who was the 80th ranked team last year? Like, what are we talking about? Like, I don't... Eastern Carolina? So, like, Eastern Carolina's going to be fighting their butts off to try to get up to the neck. Like, that doesn't do anything for me. So, I don't like that part.
So, what are you saying? You'd rather have the top 40 teams only or something
maybe,
like that?
Maybe, yeah. Like, 70, 80, try to call it a super whatever, and it's 70 teams? 80 teams? No one cares about 80 teams. No. So, I don't like that part of it. I don't like the part where it's going to turn into an absolute arms race, and like, kind of like the English Premier League is where if you have more money, you'll get better players, and they'll come play for you. And then, like, the smaller schools will always be
okay, so let me
bottom.
Explain that part away.
Okay.
Okay, it's not you go raise your own money. It's basically a collective bargaining agreement. Therefore, the funding of the players, the paying of the players, goes through much like an NFL kind of world, right? You agree with, you know, what you guys are getting, but it's not like you're going to have some booster coming in and paying $2.5 million for one quarterback and someone else going to have $100,000 coming
in. So you'll be making the same amount of money at San Jose State as you do at Alabama?
I think theoretically you could do that. I don't know if all those details are out in this, to be
okay.
honest. Like, certainly with something like this, you're going to have unanswered questions,
yeah.
but it won't be the wild, wild west. Again, there will be parameters because it's more collective bargaining agreement. I mean, this is the guy that's involved with this is actually second to Roger Goodell in command in the NFL. Mm. Now, it's not an NFL thing, but he's actually behind or at least been involved in some of the discussions. And then there's some other high-ranking people okay. that have been around college sports. So I think the models, people are looking at the model of the NFL. They actually looked at the model of the English Premier League.
Okay.
And they looked at the model of MLS as well.
Okay.
To take some of the, ideas and concepts around. But so you got to remember now, one of the big things is to avoid being the Wild Wild West in the collective bargaining part, the NIL part.
No, I agree with that. But then, so then let me ask you this. Will there be a college football players union then?
I think they would have to be. Yes. Okay. I think there would have to be. So then, they would have to be represented by something, right?
Correct. So then what is that going to look like in terms of the bargaining agreement there? Like, that could be. Like, you talk about, like, not wanting to go to trial and not wanting to. Well, what is a college football player's CBA going to look like when we're talking about, oh, I don't know, things of, like, bringing back the video game? How much you compensated there for? Like, that could be a long, drawn-out process.
The whole thing could be a long drawn.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the bottom line. You're starting to put things in place, really, for what would be a 2030 type of thing.
Okay.
There's 6 years to figure this out because TV deals are so locked in. ESPN, I think, just extended a $7.8 billion deal with college football and conferences. Yeah. So how would you get out of that? I mean, if you started this today, right, you really said, hey, we're going to go forward with this. There's no way it's getting done within the next handful of years at a minimum.
Yeah.
So I think you're looking at something that we're not asking. Funny thing is, I think it's called college football tomorrow, but we're actually not asking for it to be done tomorrow.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
All those answers that you're having, like, again, this is a pretty broad brush article about what could be. This wasn't a deep dive into video game rights but I mean, the whole umbrella of it would take six years potentially to maybe even figure out if they even have that time. The idea behind this is, I think they said in the quote was like, speed is not your friend, basically, or speed is your friend, because time is of the essence.
Yeah.
Like, you are going to drain colleges in litigation and conferences in litigation over the next 5 years around NIL. Because remember, we had Nick in earlier this week, he brought up that they're really concerned about the one in California, which he brought up.
Yeah.
And that was the one that could absolutely change the game. This article also said something interesting, that Florida State is already looking into private equity to kind of help support their collective and other things, like their football structure.
Okay.
Like, they're kind of on the forefront of that, because there's a lot of talk that private equity could actually help fund this for universities or for this college football tomorrow and other things.
Then how will this apply to basketball and other sports?
I think this is a football only thing right now, at least right now.
I mean, I don't like it.
Yeah. And by the way, I think a lot of people are not liking it, at least internally, because there are some conference commissioners, according to this article, that wouldn't even take the call or cancel the lunch, you know, about it.
Man, turn down a free lunch, too.
I know. Probably a pretty good one.
Really hate it.
But it's called the Super League. Here's what I don't mind about this conversation. Is that they're thinking of ideas. Like, in 5 to 10 years or whatever, college football is not going to look like it looks right now. College sports is not going to look how it looks right now. It looks totally different than it did 5 years ago and 10 years ago, and I anticipate more and more change in college sports over the next 5 years to 10 years that it's not going to look. So while this sounds like, on some levels, almost absurd, I think there needs to be a little bit of an earthquake in college football that changes the scene, that changes the landscape, that changes the DNA of what we're used to, which also, by the way, will impact a lot of folks that love the tradition of it, the pageantry of it, especially here in the Southeast, right, with the SEC and others. I just don't think this is going to be your daddy's college football when we look up in the year 2030 or 2035. And that's just the stark reality of it all. Whether you like it or not, that is the reality.
Why can't you just put a cap on NIL? Like, why can't they just do that?
That's a court battle, I think, right now that they're losing.
Okay.
Because they're not paid employees, I think, is the answer. Until they are paid employees where you can actually...
So they're like freelancers, essentially.
They are, yeah.
But even though they're part of the... Okay, I mean...
Well, because keep in mind now, the colleges aren't paying these guys the NIL. That's coming from an outside source.
True, yes.
Right?
Yes.
So I think that... Well, if I'm a freelancer, if you're a freelancer, you could make, what I can make in corporate America here at Cox Media Group, right? Like, we have like structures of, hey, you can't really go above this line in this position.
Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You as a not working Cox Media Group, freelance coming in, if somebody wanted to come in and be like, hey, awesome, we're going to give you X amount of money.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't,
Still waiting for that, by the way.
You wouldn't.
Sounds like a plan.
Go get it.
Yeah, for sure.
But you know what I mean? I think that's where it's a little bit of a difference. And that's without the legalese part of it. I think there's a bigger difference in all of it.
Okay. So,
I mean, it's just, what does it look like? What, in your opinion, you don't like this idea, but what does college football look like in 5 years, 10 years? Or what should it look like?
I mean, what I think that it should look like is that you have to take out the collective of the NCAA and let each conference abide by itself. Regulate itself, each conference.
So it's almost like a state government and federal government type of deal.
Yep. Now we're getting political on the show. But yeah, that's kind of what but no, I'm just kidding. Yeah, but now even that's going to be kind of corrupt because you essentially realign these conferences so horribly where, you know, you really have like three of them that are like legit. But that's what I would look into.
Yeah, I don't know really what you're talking about is potentially four conferences, though. I mean, you're not going to have 160 schools or whatever playing Division I football for this piece of the pie that ESPN just spent $7.8 billion on. Like, I think that's pretty clear. We're going to have, I mean, Pac-12's already gone. Like, sure. The Mountain West isn't going to play the same game, and the American Football Conference or the American whatever conference isn't playing the same rules as the SEC and the Big Ten in 5-10 years.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is no American Conference Network, yes. So, like, then that's on them to try to elevate their play.
So, here, just a couple more notes from this. The outline would create a system that would have the top 70 programs, all members of the five former major conferences, plus Notre Dame and new ACC member SMU, as permanent members and encompass all 130-plus universities, so football ones, the FBS ones. Mm. So that right now it leaves 60 out, but those 60 would be playing in a pool if they wish to be in that other division. And so really you have 60 teams playing for 10 spots, essentially, to get in the big dance. Which I would assume then would include revenue and a cut of, you know, the big college football playoff money and everything else. So there's plenty of motivation to get into that 10-team thing. As I said, perpetual members would be in 7 10-team divisions, joined by an 8th division of teams that would be promoted from that second tier. It borrows ideas from the Premier League and the MLS. The ACC Board of Directors heard a presentation from the group. However, planned dinners with administrators from the Big Ten, SEC, Big 12, all called off, according to this article. And the TV rights are a big problem right now because they just got them through like 2029, 2030. Here's your revenue thing. Okay. Unlike the soccer league, the revenue distribution would not be an even split among all competitors. Top brands like Alabama and Notre Dame would receive more of the financial pie. See, this is something actually that Florida State is really chasing. That's why they were like, hey, ACC, we are carrying the freight in your division, in your conference. Like, we are here and everybody else is here. We should get more of the pie.
Yeah.
And so this would actually play along with that.
Okay.
If you're a bigger brand, you're going to get more money. So if your San Jose State, maybe from an NIL standpoint, maybe acts as the same as Alabama, but San Jose State isn't making as much in this deal as Alabama is making.
Yeah, so then it's hard to justify them moving up if they can't get the players and the recruits in to help, you know, move them up.
Yeah, so the big thing, and this is what Nick Morrow was talking about from University of North Florida the other day when we had him on, is administrators are particularly concerned about the House versus NCAA class action suit in Northern California. This one seeks NIL revenue denied to athletes prior to the rule changes of 2021. Remember when Nick said that to you? Like, you could go back and get, he said this, I think, off the air, by the way, that you could go back and get NIL money.
Yeah.
When you were playing at Murray State, you know, if you felt like you lost some.
I'm coming to collect,
Can I?
Let's go, bro.
Let's go. Yeah. Ashland University, walk on.
Let's go, man.
How much NIL would I have got?
Let's go.
I'll take my $6.42. if they are successful, the NCAA and the power conferences could be on the hook for billions of dollars in damages. The House case won a several potential crippling antitrust suits. So, again, this is a legalese thing, but it's also about these guys trying to get ahead of it, or somebody trying to get ahead of it and figure it out. This also spins into a little bit of a secondary conversation I've thought of for the last month. Greg Sankey is the commissioner of the SEC. Mike, they have become the most powerful conference and player in college athletics, right? I mean, they have terrific football. They have the basketball was great this year. Got a team in the Final Four. Baseball is the best. They win a lot of championships. They put a lot of resources in. They create a lot of revenue. Their SEC network deal has become a major success point for them. And they continue to grow it. Mm-hmm. I've thought about this when he especially said something. I thought about it before, but especially when he was talking about like the Cinderellas not being involved in the NCAA tournament. And I just thought, is Greg Sankey good for college athletics? Or is he helping damage college athletics by creating like a monopoly, this power structure with the SEC and the Big Ten by eliminating? I'm not saying he solely did this, by the way, is eliminate the Pac-12, but he seems like he's certainly motivated by making SEC the biggest, baddest thing on the planet, which they've done a very good job of. But while you're doing that, you're building Walmart and putting mom and pops out of business, in a sense. Remember when all that happened 25, 30 years ago, and that was a big thing. Is that a good thing, or is it a bad thing?
No, I mean, it's not a good thing that the mom and pops are going out of business. But once again, this is the world that we live in, and the money will always be the king. So, you know, if you do have the most talent, if you do have the most, you know, draft picks, winning the most national championships, all of these things, well, then, yeah. People are going to want to pay you to showcase who you are. And that's exactly what's happened. So am I upset because the SEC essentially had so much talent that they got the most money? Well, no, because that's just the way things go. It's not fair because, once again, you have smaller conferences now that are getting screwed over. But, like, I can't be upset for the fact that, hey, some conferences just have a lot more talent or just a lot more entertaining.
Where do you think, do you like where college, like, are you okay with it? Do you think people are panicking about college sports, or is the panic justified?
I think the panic's going to be justified if they keep losing the court cases and keep losing money. And yeah, obviously panic's justified. But like where I sit right now, you know, like, am I disappointed in the Big Ten where they have like, you know, USC and Oregon and Washington? You know, coming, like, it's different, yes, but overall, it's more quality games, and, like, I'm sorry for the Pac-10 or the Pac-12 or whatever, and I'm sorry for the Big 12 as well, because they've taken a hit, but that doesn't really affect me. Like, I'm still going to see quality college football games every single Saturday, okay, and that's just the fact of life.
Yeah, you know where my thought is. Sure, is college football in the big schools, are they creating a monopoly? Well, yes, they kind of have. Right, and they've actually created a little bit of monopoly even within their own system, because the bottom line, there are some that just can't keep up with the arms race. The money that is coming into these schools, the facilities that are being built. Now, this was the last 10 years, maybe 15 years thing with the facilities. Remember, Florida got way behind on the facility front. You know, people questioned whether Florida State could keep up even dollars-wise with some of these other schools, but the Texases, the Alabamas, the USCs, like, they're printing it, mm-hmm. and it didn't matter. Well, I mean, are you really helping the other people in your conferences if you're even separating by that degree when it comes to facilities? Well, now what's really changed, in my opinion, is let's talk about facilities. First of all, they're all built up pretty well. I mean, we're now building like $60 million golf facilities at places like Vanderbilt and other things. I mean, you got your own private country club on a college campus, essentially, for your golfers at Vanderbilt, and other institutions are following suit. But now the thing that has changed the game is the NIL. I mean, now it's the collective. Now it's how much are you going to pay a player? And once again, I feel like Florida, if you really just take Florida out of the SEC, they've fallen behind a little bit. This is where a place like Florida State, to me, has actually been on the forefront. They've actually gained ground because of what they had their ducks in a row. They didn't fall apart. Remember the whole quarterback situation with Florida, where it looked like they were going to give them a ton of money, then they couldn't, then that backed out. Then, and even now, I think they're still having challenges with some of the collective NIL stuff, where if you do have the dollars, if you are ready, if you are organized, if right now you're in a much better place, in a much better situation than some of the schools that are trying to scurry and get it. And by the way, if Florida is having trouble at times, let's just say, getting it, or in this whole NIL deal trying to figure it out. Well, what's a school like Wake Forest in the ACC doing? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, no, I hear you. This is why, like, I'm a big proponent, I think, of letting each conference kind of have its own jurisdiction. You know, like, have each state run its own thing. Because when you have that, then you almost have to do right by the student-athletes. Because if you don't, they'll go someplace else. So, like, the way I envision it, and keep in mind this is just under a college football microscope, but there's other sports involved as well. But for the college football specifics, you let each conference govern itself. You take the winner of that conference, you put them in the tournament, and then you see who the best conference is. And it's essentially like it was before, except now we're not really doing any... I mean, yes, you can have a ranking system and all that stuff, but, like, rankings aren't as big now because each conference is going to, you know, select one delegate to go compete in the playoff. And maybe you can have a couple more where it's like, all right, well, this team was also good. Let's put them in the playoff as well. But that's kind of what I would do in terms of governing themselves because, like, once again, like you said, like the SEC and now the Big Ten, it's just it's two powerhouses versus everybody else.
Yeah, that's what they're trying to create. And by the way, there's an alliance there with the SEC and Big Ten, much like this college football tomorrow thing is talking about. So they have their own ideas. Where it ends up is still a mystery. But, you know, I don't know question is not an attack on Greg Sankey. I really just thought about it and was just like, I don't know if he's good or bad for college athletics. Mm-hmm. I really don't. Like, I know he's good for the SEC. I know he's good for the top, and maybe that's all that matters. Like, hey, you know, only the strong survive here, right?
Yeah.
I mean, got a little Darwinism going on or something, you know, in college football right now. Survival of the fittest. And I really don't know how history will tell us if this was good or bad for college. Right now, college athletics is viewed as bad. What's going on in college athletics is just bad. It's not a system that's sustainable. It's a system in flux. It's a system that might be broke. And it's all based on dollars. And I always think going back the root of the college sports problems, I just think started with big-time college coaches getting paid the amount of money they get paid. And I'm not sitting here blaming them, but I'm kind of blaming them. And I'm kind of blaming the institutions that allowed it to happen. We allowed it to become an arms race in college football at the coaching level where we pay people, okay, we went from $3 million a year to $5 million a year to now $6, $7, $8, $9, $10 private jets, two private jets. Okay. You take my jet, I'll take your jet.
Let me ask you this, though. How much does Alabama pull a year? Well, now it's different, but when Nick Saban was there, how much was Alabama pulling in a year?
I understand the justification. He runs the Tuscaloosa.
But no, I'm saying, how much money were they bringing in for the football program?
A ton.
Okay. Well, someone has to go out there, recruit the players, bring said players in, coach them up, get the W's, win the national championships to get that much money. If Alabama wasn't winning national championships, they wouldn't be pulling in what they're pulling in.
I get it. I still, like you just said, there should be a cap on NIL. Why can't that college football kid might do the same thing for the university, but you're willing to cap the NIL. Why couldn't you cap the coaches at some point?
No, I mean, I didn't cap the coaches by all means, but I'm saying I'm not going to be upset because Nick Saban's making what he's making because look at how much money he's profiting in that university in return.
Yeah, listen, it showcases that, but this is why I get so mad at Saban and others that won't admit that they were the domino that fell when they were the first domino that did this. And again, this wasn't solely on them. This has to do with TV contracts. This has to do with college football playoff. I mean, the only reason those old heads finally turned and said, okay, we'll do something different than a computer ranking or a poll is because money was involved. And they said, okay, we can get more sponsorship. We can get more TV. And they finally like, okay, good. Let's bring it in. Well, when you did that, then the coaches got paid even more, right? It became more of a premium. It became more important because those dollars become so important. I mean, this is a natural domino effect, but it never got capped. And sooner or later, you're building Taj Mahals at $50 million for a football-only facility, or you're renovating your stadium. Why? Because, like you said, the money's coming in. Let's reinvest it back in the program so it keeps coming in. Well, that's good business. Oh, but wait a minute. We're not a business. We're like a nonprofit. We're a college. We're not a business. And then on top of that, the kids finally said, where the hell's mine?
Correct.
So that's kind of how this all fell, and I'll probably missed a piece or two or wherever else. But when it all started to become about money, which started, in my opinion, with the coaches, because when Texas is willing to lure someone away from another school because they're going to pay him $2 million more dollars, that's about money. That's not about opportunity. That's about money. You win the money race. I mean, if I'm asking you to go to do this show today or that show right over there,
yeah,
and you're going to get paid almost twice as much, like, You're not asking questions. You're like, thank you, I'm coming.
Yeah, but when I was a football player, and like obviously like, our coach made a lot of money, I was never saying, like, pointing the finger, saying, well, look at how much money he's making, and I'm not making anything.
He
like,
made $300,000. It's totally different than making $12 million.
Okay, well, he made a lot more than $300,000, first of all. And number two, it's got my point is, like, I don't think players are looking at in Alabama saying, well, Nick Saban's getting this much, why can't I get paid? I think they're saying, we're putting our bodies on the line, I need to be compensated for that. I don't think the head coach had anything to do with the NIL. I think players in Alabama, for instance, let's take Alabama, because they're the king of football, right? I think players in Alabama said, listen, look at how much money me, as a player, are making this university. My jerseys are getting sold. There's merchandise getting sold. I'm not getting any part of that pot. I think Nick Saban making what he was making was secondary. I think players were upset just because they're putting their bodies on the line and not being compensated for it.
Yeah, I think that became part of it. But I think the Northwestern guys were part of the – or the Northwestern was one of the originals to kind of go and start, you know, poking around on this thing or a lawsuit that came about. I'm not sure that was all even football-related, if I remember correctly. So I think – I just think the money race, I mean, I disagree with you there. I think eventually we get to that point where NIL, but this started even before NIL. I mean, NIL was a solution for some of this because the boiling point had hit. The dollars had become a thing even before NIL. It was like, how are we going to get paid? People like Northwestern, other students, and started to be like, what about us? That what about us question came, in my opinion, because of the dollars that were going on. And not just football. I say big-time college basketball, too. And what's actually leaked into big-time college baseball and other sports. But it's not just that, Austin. It's not just how much they are making. It's the fact that that coach that is making that much money promised me the same thing that he just promised the next kid and the other kid. And now we got 3 5-stars competing for one spot. He doesn't care who wins as long as we win because it's more money for me. And then that guy, coach, can promise all 3 guys and then walk out the door 3 months later and go take a different job. Well, that pisses people off.
It pisses you off. That's the way that it's always been. If you're a high school athlete and a coach comes to sit down in your living room and says, I'm going to be here for 4 years, then you're naive to think that. Because that's never how it goes. Like, you should know that going into the conversations.
Well, that's not true. That's not never how it goes. It's how it used to go.
Oh, they used to promise you everything?
Sure, they promised you everything, okay. And then you were there for 4 years.
Okay.
Most of the time.
Okay.
Or you transferred and sat out a year.
Okay. Yeah, because transferring is different now. Like, you wouldn't want to transfer because, heck, I'm not sitting out a year. So, like, that changed things, too.
But that's power of the coach is my point.
Okay.
If coach walks into my living room and your living room tells me the same exact thing, and we both say yes, mm-hmm. We're stuck if he delivers or not under the old rules.
Correct.
Or we got to go sit out a year.
Yeah.
Right?
And then they made that right.
Well, they made that right, but we had to get to us. I mean, they just made that right.
Okay.
I mean, there's boiling points here in college sports that got us to here as much.
No, I understand. My whole thing, though, is I think when Northwestern brought up their concerns and threatened to go with a union and start bringing up NIL, I don't think it came from a standpoint of, I don't like how much my football coach is making. I don't like how much my basketball coach is making. I think it was more from the lines of, listen, being a student-athlete's a full-time job, and we should be compensated for that.
I think I think there's definitely part of it. I would just disagree. I think the origin, the genesis of all this came from, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, came from the dollars. And if you follow the dollars, it came from conferences to facilities to coaches or coaches to facilities and then and then over-promising and under-delivering, and the coach playing by a different set of rules, which, by the way, might be fair, that he can go jump around. But I'll always use the Georgia example. Kirby Smart got Jacob Eason as a 5-star. He got Jake Fromm as a 5-star. And he got Justin Fields as a 5-star. And there's no way in hell he didn't tell them all the same damn thing. You come here, be a starter, win a national championship, win a Heisman Trophy. And somehow he got them all to come there. And guess what? Two of them ended up leaving there because he couldn't have all three quarterbacks playing.
I hate to tell you, man, but in the real world, bosses lie all the time. But bosses lie to try to get the bottom dollar, try to get the best out of their company.
They do, but in the real world, there's one job for you as a host on this show. There's not three of you coming in.
Well, there's three of you when I left?
there's a GM position, there's a this position, there's a this position. They're not bringing three people in for the same position to go work. They're bringing them in for the interview, but not going to work.
What's up, Clay Harbor, Rasheed Mathis?
No, that was after you were gone.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Right. See, it took that many to replace.
Man, what an honor that was.
We needed a 2-star and a 3-star at Georgia just to replace Justin Fields or Jake Fromm or whoever else.
What a boost to my ego right there.
Let's take a timeout. That's our college sports soapbox, I guess, if you will. And hey, the bottom line is, to me, where are we going to be in 2030? Where are we going to be in 2035? And it's just a totally different landscape. I don't think anybody can answer. I thought this article was pretty fascinating. I'm not saying it's exactly the right way to go, but I also don't think it's far out of the realm of possibility. I think whatever seems unlikely could be very much. I think it's going to shake up college sports, college football especially, and maybe basketball, but definitely college football. I think it's going to shake up college football big time over the next 10 years. Like, it is not going to look like what everybody looked like in 5 years ago, 15 years ago, 50 years ago, for sure. And that model is archaic. And we're on the verge of seeing it, in my estimation. We're live at String Sports Brewery. Come hang out with us. They just open the doors. 11 o'clock, it opens up. Check out the menu. Have a drink. Come by for your lunch hour. Shoot some free throws. Hang with us. We're here until 1 o'clock. The Brent and Austin Show on the Action Sports Shacks 24/7 Network.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.